Lord, your word is an incredible thing. It's a living word. It was written years ago, but in each day since, it has had value and continues to have value and will have value because it's you speaking to us. So, Lord, speak to us this morning. Show us those things in our hearts that we need to have dealt with by you. And Lord, if in this passage there are things we need to take on board, things we need to be reminded of, Lord, have us have a teachable spirit. Lord, open our ears and our eyes, our hearts and our minds. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. So this morning, after a 9-month break, I think, in Genesis, we're back in Genesis. For the next few months, we'll be following the ups and downs of Abram, or Abraham, as he will become. And I think it's worth, before we dive into those verses which Joanna read to us, I think it's worth setting out a few markers so that we can picture where we are geographically and historically. You see, the parts of the first 11 chapters that we were looking at, it's not absolutely possible for us to be definitive about times and dates. But as we hit chapter 12, it changes, and it changes a lot. Because when we put all the information there is in the Bible, alongside archaeological records, Abram's lifetime can be confidently dated to around about 2,000 years before the birth of Christ. So that's where we are. But there's more than that, because as well as kind of popping back 4 centuries, as we're going to really start to get an understanding of Abram, we need to travel to a place called a place called Ur of the Chaldees. And Ur was a big city. It was on the banks of the River Euphrates. The River Euphrates is still flowing strong. And it's going through modern-day Iraq, out into the Persian Gulf, very close to Kuwait. So that's where we're going. And historians say that Ur was one of the most important cities in the ancient world. It had a university with a very big library. And the academics of the day were really into maths, so James would have loved it. Astronomy, and alongside that, there was a lot of international trade. So it wasn't just academia, there was international stuff, trade going on. So think of a city like London, New York, or Singapore. And it's likely as well, at the time, it was quite a big city. So population for a big city at that time, around about 250,000. And another help from archaeological digs is that the area discovered around about where Ur was also discovered as a big pagan worship centre for the moon goddess Nanna. So that's where he came from. But what do you know about Abram as we join him? Well, he's middle-aged, at least for those days, because he's about 75. And that's middle-aged when you find out what time he died. But we're not there yet. He's not dead yet. We're just starting up on a journey with him. And as well as being a businessman, he was probably quite well-connected in the city and beyond. And he's also married to Sarai, but they don't have children. There's also a really big thing that strikes me about Abram. That there is no sign at all that he is on the lookout for God. There's no sign he's looking for God. But as we very quickly see, God was certainly on the lookout for Abram. So let's turn to our passage. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and to him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So what we've got here is one of the key passages in the Bible. A passage that changes everything that follows. Everything that follows here is changed because of what happens here. As we look at it, I want to remind us again that we're not given the slightest hint that Abram is trying to find God. You know, sometimes people have told me about, you know, when they came to faith, and they said, well, when I found God. And in a sense, they kind of did, because, as I said earlier, you know, it's where they probably turned around and saw that he was on their shoulders, saying, look, here I am, here I am. But first of all, it was him that was tapping them on the shoulder. It was him that found them. It was him that found me. It was him that found you if you're a Christian. It's him that is looking for you and looking out for you if you're not a Christian yet, because he loves you. As we're reminded in our recent venture into the book of Ephesians, we were dead. Spiritually, we were dead. And it is by grace we're saved. Ephesians 2:5 says, even when we were dead in our trespasses, he made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. Nothing we can do. We can't run after God. Well, we can, but we'll never catch up with him. It takes him to catch up with us by grace. So God turns up uninvited, uninspected, unexpected. And do you know, he also turns up in a very unambiguous way, doesn't he? It's very clear what God is doing here, what he's saying here. There is no doubt at all. Just look at what God says to Abram in verse 1. I mean, this is a negotiation going on here. He doesn't say, well, what do you think about this, Abram? How about this? He says, no, leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's household. Go to the land that I will show you. Abram was asked to leave everything in order to follow God's call. What would you do? There you are, you're in the prime of life, and you've got a good job, you've got a bit of spare cash, you've got a nice home, you're well liked, you're well known in the city, you've got a lot of friends, and everything is looking good. Then suddenly God, who you've only just met, says, leave everything, leave your friends, leave your family, leave your home, leave your livelihood. In fact, leave everything that makes you feel secure. If it makes you feel secure, let go of it and come and follow. Can you imagine that conversation? Abram sitting down maybe after a busy day when he hears this voice. Oh, evening, Abram. This is God. I'm just checking in because I want you to leave here and head off to a place that I'm going to show you. Well, what place? Says Abram. Well, that's not really the point. I just want you to go to the place that I'm going to show you. You don't know it. There's no point in me telling you. Well, okay, but at least try me, says Abram. Well, it's 1,000 miles pretty much by road to a place called Canaan. 1,000 miles, is that a joke? No, I'm serious. I planned this a while back. Trust me. Oh, and there's something else. What else? Well, I'm going to make you the father of a great nation. Now, look, God, I don't know if you realise or not, but we haven't got any children. That's mad. We don't have children, and you know, late middle age is not a time for children, is it? Oh, it'll be fine. Just trust me. Trust you. You want me to leave everything, to head off across to a desert place, place that I've just not heard of, and become the father of a great nation that doesn't exist yet? Yeah, you've understood. Great, and I suppose you haven't told Sarah about any of this either, have you? Oh no, I'm sure you can handle that. I bet it was a lot more spiritual than that. But all the same, this was no simple thing for Abram. We look at these things and we see God says to somebody, do this, and they go and do that, and we just think, oh, that's normal. Well, of course it's not. It's really abnormal. It's not what happens. Except when God gets involved, it is. Let's just touch a bit more on verses 2 and 3 before we move on. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That is an incredible promise, isn't it? It's an amazing promise. But there are a couple of things I want us to notice here. Firstly, when you think about it, big parts of this promise, the promise that God makes to Abram, are things that Abraham himself will have known when he was promised that, you know, even if he trusted God for them, that he would never see them in his lifetime. Think about it. Abram and Sarai, they're childless, but even if they were to quickly produce a dozen children, it would take many, many generations for Abram to become the father of a great nation. He's not going to see it. And what about having a great name? Having a great name. I've no doubt he already, where he was, had a very good name. He's in his own land, he's got a good name. But surely, wandering off to a foreign country, that means starting over again. Before he gets to have a great name, he's got to learn, he's got to earn a good name, isn't he? Most of this stuff is going to be after he's dead, what he's being promised. But in these verses 2 we read, I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. Just consider that part. Abram's calling is to be blessed by God so that others may be blessed through him. And of course, in that ultimate form, that blessing is going to come through Abram's amazing great descendant, Jesus Christ. And oh, what a blessing that is. That is the ultimate blessing. Everybody who trusts in Jesus is going to be blessed because of Abram. That's the ultimate form. But you know, there is something else. In its simplest form, Christians are called to be a blessing too. We won't be called to be as an incredible blessing, to be used in the same way that Abram was. But we're called to be a blessing. Are you blessed by others? I know that I'm blessed by others. I'm blessed by the worship group as they lead us. I'm blessed when I hear others reading the word. I'm blessed when I turn up to a prayer meeting and there are others who have actually bothered to turn up and come along and pray and encourage us. That's a real blessing. I'm blessed by the discussions in home groups. I'm blessed by friendships and fellowship. We are so blessed, aren't we? If we're seriously engaged with each other, we'll find ourselves soaking up blessings like a sponge. We should. We should soak up those blessings. They're for us. We should thank God for his gift to us, of our brothers and our sisters. Like a sponge, we should soak up those blessings. But also like a sponge, we should be squeezing out God's blessings on others. Soak up the blessings that God gives us, using others so often, and squeeze those blessings out on others. This is a real sharing. Are you a blessing to others? Well, that's a bit of a rude thing to ask, isn't it? I'll let you answer that one with God, not me. But are you? Are you a blessing with others? Maybe you're thinking, well, I've got nothing to offer. How can I possibly bless anyone? I mean, I'm just me. How can I bless anyone? What if that is you? I would simply say to you, that is absolute, well, codswallops. You used to call it that. Rubbish. Garbage. Whatever you want to use. It's rubbish. If you turn up to pray, I can assure you, you will bless others. Even if you turn up and you just sit there quietly, you'll be a blessing. If you turn up to a home group, you will bless others. If you turn up to clean the windows, you will bless others. If you take time to talk to someone who you've never talked to before, or someone who's by themselves, then you will bless others. If you turn out for an evening service, you'll bless others. And of course, I could go on and on and on. But you know what's the amazing thing about this? Not only will you bless others, but you'll be blessed yourself. That's the amazing way of God's economy and everything. The more we give, the more he pours out upon us. It's true financially. It's true with our time. It's true with our commitment. But the point is, you do have something to offer your brothers and sisters here that will bless us. God has blessed you so you can bless others. Do you? If not, will you? I think it is so exciting when we see God at work in each other, I find it really exciting. You see, God is encouraging somebody to do something and they're stepping out and they're doing it. It might be a small thing, it might be a big thing. Whatever it is encouraging. It'd be good to share more and more on this and encourage us more and more. But we do have the rest of our text, so let's get back to where we were. And back to Abram. But before we do, I just want to ask us, each one of us, to take this to the Lord daily and pray that he will help us to seek to be a blessing to others. Now, that's difficult. You know, if you're having a bit of a barney with somebody, if you're not English, that's an argument. That's difficult, isn't it? You know, somebody in the family you've had a falling out with the night before and you haven't put things right. Well, it's a good start, isn't it? Ask the Lord to help you in that as well. Help the Lord to bless you so you can bless others. He will, you know. He does. He has never been known to fail on that. So, Abram went, verse 4, as the Lord told him. Well, that's an easy statement, isn't it? Abram went. Well, I'm not sure I would have done. I hope I would have done, but Abram did. He went. Hebrews 11 tells it like this. By faith, Abram obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, that's not something we encourage people to do very often, is it? I'm sure that, like me, many of you will have discovered, though, when God calls, he very rarely gives much detail past the first step. In my experience, he just says enough to get you to take that first step. And then when you've taken that first step, well, at the right point, he'll tell you the next step. It may be immediate, you may have to wait. Now, when we look at Abram, we see a man of really impressive faith. Yes, perhaps he had uncertainties. He no doubt had doubt. He probably wondered a lot, what's going on here? But he went. But obedient as Abram was, have you noticed that he wasn't completely obedient? What do we read? And Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. If you look back to verse 1, what does God tell Abram? Go out from your kindred, go out from your family. What did Abram do? He took along his family, his nephew Lot. Well, in future chapters, we are going to see that Lot really was not going to be turning out to be a blessing for Abraham. Instead, he's more likely to turn out to be a blessed nuisance. Verse 5. And Abram took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had, and gathered the people that they had acquired in Haran. You might remember that at the end of chapter 11, that Abram left Ur of the Chaldeans with his dad, Terah. And it looks like they stayed in Haran for quite a while, long enough at least, to gather, acquire quite a lot of possessions, a lot of stuff and people. And they set out on to go to the land of Canaan. Then after a few weeks of travel, of course, Abram and all his hangers-on, they arrive at the very land that God had promised. Yet the Canaanites were still in the land. We read that, don't we? The Canaanites were still in the land. And they had no intention of giving it to Abram. In fact, it was several hundred years later that Joshua and Caleb would come and take most of the land by force. We're getting ahead of ourselves there, though. For now, Abraham comes into an occupied land. Well, verse 6 tells us that having arrived in Canaan, he doesn't stop just inside the border, but he keeps going. Abram passed through the land and went, land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Now, if you were to take a map of the Bible and do some research, you would find that Shechem is right in the middle of Canaan. And it's a place that is a really big crossroads. It's the scene of a number of things that happen through history. It is where Jacob came to safety when he came back from Laban with his wives and children. If you want to check out that later, you have to jump ahead to Genesis 33:18. It was in Shechem that Jacob brought some land from a Canaanite called Hamor for 100 pieces of silver. Genesis 33:19. And there he built an altar to the Lord called Elohim. Israel. Guess where that is? That's the next verse. Genesis 33:20. It is Shechem where Jacob dug his famous well. And it's tragically Shechem where Dinah, Jacob's daughter, was raped and where her brothers were massacred. Her brothers massacred the men of the city. Pretty grim stuff happening there. You can find that about in Genesis 34. It's here that Joseph's bones were finally buried when they were carried out of Egypt. Joshua 24:32. It was at Shechem where Joshua made a covenant with Israel, renewing their commitment to the Lord God of Israel and proclaiming, what did he say? He said, as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord. Joshua 24. If you want to find Shechem in the New Testament, you can turn to John 4 and you'll find it was there, known as Sychar. It's where Jesus met the Samaritan woman at the well, the very well that Jacob had dug. That's John 4. Anyhow, New Testament's a long way from where we are with the beginning of Abraham's wandering or walk. Let's get back to him. We've been discussing. He'd made a pit stop at the Oak of Moreh near Shechem. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. I don't know about you, but I often think that God communicates in some pretty dramatic, but sometimes seemingly erratic ways. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that God's communication isn't perfect. It is. He communicates more properly than any of us can. What I'm saying, though, is that God doesn't seem to communicate quite in the way we like. He doesn't say things in the way we'd like him to say things when we would like him to say things so often. Take Abram, for instance. We heard that God had told Abram to go and that God had been Abram had been surprisingly obedient. But then, as far as we're told, Abram's wandering along, he hears nothing significant from God. He doesn't hear from God for a very long time. In fact, in all the time he and the crew have been travelling over those nearly 1,000 miles, there is no hint that God has been saying much. Then suddenly, well, there are a couple of things I think to think on here. And the first is that God had clearly been communicating with Abram. How do we know that? It's not said. Well, because Abram ended up in exactly the place that God wanted him to be. We heard that he was told he was to go to a place he didn't know. And yet he ended up in a place where God wanted him. So yes, in Genesis, we get the highlights reported to us. We don't get all the nitty-gritty of the journey, what went on, where they stopped, what was going on. But it is clear that when God calls, he leads, he provides, he stays close, and he protects. We've seen that in this passage, haven't we? Did Abram know where to go? Yes, he did, because God showed him. Did Abram have all he needed? Yes, he did. God provided it. Were Abraham and all with him safe, even across such a long, major journey? Yes, because God was their protection. It is as clear as day to me, though. Nothing is explicitly said. It's all clear. Another thing that's clear is that Abram, with his faith, clung onto God like a limpet. If you don't know what a limpet is, it's a shellfish that will cling on hard to something. Abram clung on to God. It is absolutely sure he must have done. He surely had to. Otherwise, he wouldn't have turned up in the right place. Friends, if you're a Christian, there's something important for you to know here. Because you might think, well, Abraham, well, you know, he's a big character in the Bible. God has something special for him to do. So he had a call on his life. You're a Christian, God's got a call on your life as well. It may not be big. It may be small. It may be big. Big, medium, or large, he's got a call on your life. How you live it, where you live it, how you serve him. You've signed all of that away to God because you've given your life to him if you're a Christian. Yes, he has a call on every aspect of your life. Now, you may not be traveling from Ur to Canaan, but God still has you daily walking for his purposes. It may be that you would love to go somewhere else, and God says, you stay put. You've got a job to do here. It may be the opposite. But let me seriously encourage you to take a leaf out of Abram's book. And whatever your life is looking like as you're following God, cling to him like a limpet. Ask him to lead you. Ask him to feed you. Ask him to protect you. Ask him to use you. And yes, cling on to him like a limpet. So you will hear, receive, be blessed, bless others. God has a firm, loving grip on you. So cling on to him and enjoy the journey with a true experience of his leading. With a true experience of his provision. Not scrapping around thinking, how can I do this? Don't worry. If he's told you to do something, he'll provide. He will. You just have to trust him and wait. His peace, his protection, they all come with stepping out in faith. Leading, provision, peace and protection. That's the first thing I want to point out to us about God's communication. It is not erratic at all. It might look to us sometimes, well, how did that work? Well, God will always communicate well. But here's the second. It can be dramatic. When we need our faith backing up, when we need a big encouragement, God will always use the right time and the right territory to speak into our situation. Abram's call was one he jumped into with an almost absolute faith. But I can tell you from experience, and I'm sure many here will be able to do the same thing, and you share your experience too. When you make a big step in that way, when you do something which is completely counter to what the world would have you do, what your family would have you do, what you even in your head you think you should do, when it's going to cost you, you make that step, God will always direct you. He will always provide confirmation, direction, and peace at just the right points. It may only be just at the right points. It may be what you think is the last minute, but they'll be there if you're trusting him and you're going his way. What did God do for Abram here? He said to Abram, you're doing well. I promised you I'd lead you to a land. Well, here we are. We're right in the middle of it. Look around. Look in every direction. This will belong to your family. The whole of this land is going to be your family's land. And I'm going to make a nation out of you. Abram was so blessed by that. Despite the fact that God had given him no clue about how all of this was going to actually pan out, Abram was so blessed that what did he do? He simply trusted God in the uncertainty and he got busy worshipping him. He built an altar and got busy worshipping. Abram served a mighty, magnificent, merciful, marvelous God. A God whose love and justice flows like mighty rivers. And if you are born again, if you've given your life to Jesus, then you serve the very same God. How can we not want to worship him? How can we not want to live each part of our lives enjoying the blessings, trusting him in his surprises, and longing to keep spiritually skipping along beside him? What a saviour we have. So Abraham's been busy worshipping. Then he goes south again and we read in verse 8, from there he moved to the hill country, the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. Now, we're coming to close here, which you'll be delighted about, I'm sure. But do you notice one thing here? Abram pitched his tent. He didn't build a house. In fact, as far as I'm aware, Abram never lived in a house. He always lived in a tent. And if you think about it, if you are just passing through somewhere, you don't need a house, do you? You need temporary accommodation. You don't want to be putting down roots because you're passing through to the place that you're going. If you're not making a permanent home somewhere, then you pitch your tent. Spiritually, that is just how we should be in our earthly lives. How it should be in our life in this world. Because this is not our permanent home. That means we mustn't build our lives here. It's so easy to do that. But we're just passing through. We're on a journey towards home. We're not there yet. We need to have our eyes, though, fixed on that perfect home. Yes, God blesses us. And of course, most of us live in a house. I don't think many of us live in a tent. But you see what I'm saying? If spiritually we have secured our roots here, we've taken our eyes off Jesus. We've taken our eyes off our permanent, perfect, amazing promise of a home. We need to live as people who have their permanent home in heaven and not on earth. And Abram journeyed on, still going towards the Negev. Now the Negev is a desert region southwest of the Dead Sea. And that's where we're going to pick up with Abram next week. But let's just remember those things. We are called, all of us, we're called. He will lead us. He might not lead us very far from here, but he will lead us. He may lead us, and I believe he is leading us, to reach out into the community here. He's leading us to reach deeper into his heart and soak up more of his love that we may share that with others. He's leading us. He's blessing us. And he doesn't want us to put down roots here. He wants to provide us with everything we need. And as we are moving through towards that amazing home in heaven, that's exactly where he wants us to draw others. We can't save anyone, but we can tell people about Jesus. And he will do the saving. Let's pray.